I'm Kara Lawrence, and this is Let's Hear It. Today, I have a guest from Battle Creek. The maestra of the Battle Creek Symphony, Anne Harrigan, is preparing a concert version of a beloved musical, Guys and Dolls, a musical fable of Broadway. It's set for Saturday at 7:30 in W.K. Kellogg Auditorium with a cast of 15 plus the orchestra. Anne, very nice to have you back.
Well, thank you, Kara. It's very nice to be here. It's wonderful to be able to talk in person as we are this year. As nice as it is to talk over the phone, it's just nice to see you face to face, I feel like.
We have a lot of fun face to face.
We do. And speaking of fun, Guys and Dolls is going to be fantastic. We had been planning it for a long time, and it was scheduled for last year.
A year ago.
So this is the reschedule, the COVID reschedule, but we are back in force. We had our first concert October 2nd. Totally successful. Safety protocols were in place. No outbreaks. The concert was amazing. We did Copland's Appalachian Spring. Kevin Cole performed Rhapsody in Blue. We had a chance to talk to Kevin.
He is a good raconteur. I really love Kevin Cole.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. Armed Forces Salute was a huge hit with our audiences, something they don't usually hear in the concert hall. And it was such a wonderful start to the season. And now here we are just a month later with our next concert with Guys and Dolls, a concert version, lightly staged, I should say, with a stellar cast of 15 guest artists and a fairly large orchestra for musical theater. I think these days it seems like the musical theater orchestras have shrunk a bit. And Kara, you probably...
I'm aware of this, acutely aware of this. And when, you know, a music director calls and says, would you like to do this musical? And then I look at Reed One and I have to play five different instruments.
I believe it.
And some I play much, much better than others. But, you know, you want to say yes. So there you are with a whole lot of extra material on your hands that back in the day would never have been that way. I think the orchestra pits of the 50s and 60s were large. You had 30 people in there. I mean,
They were much more orchestral, but hands down to you for being a doubler in the language. And I'm sure you play all the instruments extremely well, because I've never known you to walk into anything that you didn't take very seriously. But in fact, we are we're kind of mixing things up. We do have some doublers, you know, kind of the lingo we're talking about for the orchestra. Oftentimes a woodwind player will get what's called a reed book. And in that reed book, they might be asked, for example, and Guys and Dolls, this is actually no exception. They might be asked to play clarinet, tenor sax, alto sax, and bassoon. In our case, we don't have a bassoon player who also plays saxophone. There are some who do, or clarinet. So we are splitting those books. So we have our standard orchestra, plus we have some musicians who are well accomplished in the practice of playing many different saxophones, particularly saxophone, clarinet. But it is very interesting to see the kind of mixing together of those two things. One of the things that I guess is not that unusual but caught me off guard is there are no viola parts.
In Guys and Dolls.
I think that's tragic.
You're allowed to say that. I mean, you know, the viola section. It has to stay home.
What's an orchestra without violas?
Exactly. Well, and that deep, rich tone. Why did they forego such a beautiful part?
It's a mystery to me. It is. But it is a wonderful score. I mean, the tunes, as we know, are so memorable. Many people probably got to know the musical either through high school or through the famous movie with Marlon Brando and Frank Sinatra. Still playing. Was playing last night somewhere. Vivian Blaine. But if you think of all the great songs, Sit Down, You Rock in the Boat, Luck Be a Lady, Guys and Dolls, The Oldest Established, the hit list goes on and on.
The stories on which it's based by Damon Runyon are funny and I think kind of based on true-to-life stories and characters you might have found in New York, people running side hustles and, you know, various alternate economies.
Yes.
And then it's taken with a very light air, of course. And then you have this very serious and religious young woman, Sarah Brown, who is certainly against the concept of gambling. The Salvation Army is trying to reform people. And so that's a great setup for conflict and humor and romance.
It is. In fact, there's a song called I'll Know, in which she runs into this gambler, Sky Masterson, who actually, she doesn't really run into him. He has been given a bet to take her on a date because she is, in fact, a very strong religious woman. And she says she knows when she falls in love, she knows it's going to be somebody with a strong moral fiber, you know, and she believes that sincerely. Of course, things don't go as planned always, and the heart knows what the heart knows. But that's the jokes behind it. It's the same for The Marriage of Figaro.
Oh yeah.
As it is here, and similar to The Marriage of Figaro, we have two pairs of heroines and heroes. So we have Sarah Brown, Miss Sarah Brown, who is with the Salvation Army, and her father or uncle Arvide Abernathy. Mm. And then she has, and then we have Sky Masterson, the gambler who's, you know, debonair, dashed into town. That's one couple who keeps kind of conflicting with each other, as you say, and have this chemistry, mm-hmm. which is also talked about in the musical. And then the other end, we have the entirely comical Nathan Detroit, who is the owner of the oldest established permanent floating crap game in New York, and his fiancée of 40 years, Miss Adelaide.
Right, a longtime couple.
Yes, who has told her mother that she's been married, and I think she has five kids. And so a lot of comedy going on there. The other thing that's interesting, though, which I knew but didn't really fully understand until I committed to this, is not only do you have these four leads already, which is a lot, you know, now on top of it, we have three sub-characters who have strong roles. You have, they start out with this fugue for tin horns, which is a fantastic piece, very comical, well-written for voices. And this, the characters are Nicely Johnson, Benny Goodman, and Rusty Charlie. So in our performance, a Nicely Johnson will be performed by Altamise Carolyn Cooper.
That's normally a male singing.
That is normally a male role, but as we were looking at casting, we'll talk about that a little bit later, why we chose Altamise. Rusty Charlie will be performed by Jeff Cachero, who is well known to Kalamazoo Civic Theater audiences. He performs often as a prominent tenor and a teacher at Lakeview Schools. And Benny South Street will be performed by Colin McAdoo, who is a well-known regional and Broadway actor.
I have the 1992 Broadway Revival, which is a very nice, if you want a full album of Guys and Dolls, I enjoyed this one a lot. But I think I first heard it in 1992 from RCA Victor. So let us reacquaint ourselves with Guys and Dolls and Act One, Fugue for Tin Horns. And I just love that it's a fugue, but you still understand all the words, and it's very funny.
You do.
Here we go.
I got the horse right here, the name is Paul Revere, and here's a guy that says if the weather's clear, can do, can do. This guy says the horse can do, if he says the horse can do, can do, can do.
I'm thinking Valentine, cause on the morning line, the guy has got him figured at 5 to 9. But look at F and half, he weighs it by a half, according to this here is a telegraph.
For Paul Revere out bite, I hear his foot's all right. Of course it all depends if it rained last night.
I know it's Valentine, the morning marks look fine. Besides the jockey's brother's a friend of mine.
And just a minute, boys, I got the phoenix noise. It's his great-grandfather, like terrible poise.
I tell you, Paul revere. Now this is no bum steer. It's from a handicap, but that's real sincere.
I go for Valentine, cause on the morning line, the guy has got him figured as 5 to 9. So make it epitaph, you can buy a half. According to this, here and there's photograph. Epitaph,
Valentine, Paul Revere, I got the horse.
Well, that's how we're starting this hour as we preview Guys and Dolls. It will be staged at the W.K. Kellogg Auditorium in Battle Creek, a semi-stage production at 7:30 on Saturday with Ann Harrigan, my guest here today, conducting the cast of 15 plus the orchestra. And we were talking about how these musicals from that certain era, the 50s and 60s, are starting to be considered concert pieces for orchestra. Orchestras are adapting these all the time, and I think they are taking on the name classic.
I think so, too. And especially during this time, you know, as we are reemerging, or I don't know if we're surviving or emerging or what we're doing from this pandemic, learning to live with it, people are looking back to a time when things were simpler. Much simpler and happier, and wanting that nostalgia. And I think a piece like Guys and Dolls is even more appreciated now after we've had a year of no music or whatever virtual offerings we could get and appreciated. But being able to gather together and listen to that and just not worry for a couple hours, you know, not have to think about things and just be entertained with great tunes.
I like the sort of luxuriousness of a full evening of a show like this. This was, you know, your whole night out, and the huge cast, the huge orchestras, and the less penny pinching than perhaps that you might find today. And so it's wonderful that orchestras have seen that, well, perhaps we can adapt to recreate the lushness of these pieces that in some ways isn't as affordable as it used to be and isn't as sustainable. So I don't know. I like that. I like that it sort of, you picked up that football when it was thrown.
Well, there's a lot of different reasons. It's, of course, I love musicals. It's a musical I played in high school. It's an opportunity to share something like that with our audiences. Particularly in Battle Creek, we don't have a ton of musical theater offerings. And so this is something that there was a need and an interest in our audiences. But also it was an opportunity to collaborate with some great artists and some great organizations. The first of which is Western Michigan University.
That's great.
Yes, we have been very fortunate. We've had some great collaborations in the past. You know, we've had Gold Company come and perform with us. That was fantastic. And we've had lots of teachers and musicians, students coming over over the years. But recently, we've been collaborating with the Western Michigan University Musical Theater Department with the help of one of their faculty members, Ed Walker, who helped to identify cast members and audition and help to train actually our ensemble members. So we've got quite a few young artists who will be coming over singing everything from the Salvation Army folks to the Crapshooters to the Dancers who are singing Bushel and a Peck, Take Back Your Mink. And so that's very exciting. And it gets even better. Because we had a last-minute cancellation. One of our leads got cast in a movie.
Oh.
It's very exciting.
Yeah, I got to let him go for that.
And there's lots going on. And so we decided to hire a recent Western grad, Savannah Fisher, who had performed Guys and Dolls at Western Michigan University just a few years ago as Sarah Brown. And we're very excited to be featuring her as well. Tremendously talented. We actually heard her at the Music Center. She sang part of her graduation recital, her audition recital, for the board as part of one of our musical moments. So kind of exciting to bring that full circle, to have somebody who we'd heard as a student now in New York making her way, you know, as a professional and bringing her back now at a professional level. So she'll be singing the role of Sarah Brown.
We have a chance to take a moment to hear one of her great moments, which is, as you were pointing out before, it's called I'll Know. And why don't we listen to that song and come back and preview more of Guys and Dolls?
That sounds fantastic.
For I've imagined every bit of him, from his strong moral fiber to the wisdom in his head, to the homey aroma of his pipe.
You have wished yourself a Scarsdale Galahad, the breakfast-eating Brooks Brothers type.
Yes, and I shall meet him when the time is ripe.
You've got the guy all figured out.
I have.
Including what he smokes. All figured out, huh?
All figured out. I need not some fly-by-night Broadway romance. Until then, I shall wait. Until then, I'll be slow. I'll know when my love comes along.
We are listening to a highlight from Guys and Dolls with the conductor of the Battle Creek Symphony Orchestra, Anne Harrigan. She'll be leading a concert version of this at 7:30 p.m. at WKCal Auditorium in Battle Creek, with a cast of 15 and the Battle Creek Symphony Orchestra bringing this classic musical to life with a young cast. And you mentioned that there's a significant contingent from the School of Theater here at Western Michigan University. And I'm always amazed at how talented they are. So it's I have zero nervousness that they will really come through on Saturday night, even with all the stuff they're already juggling. At the theater school, they tend to be, you know, get a very professional attitude very early at that school.
I think they do, and certainly under the tutelage of Ed Walker, even more so. Interestingly, the cast is a wide mix. We have everything from Broadway stars to Western students and in between. Many regional theater stars, some with local backgrounds, as Altamise Carolyn Ballard Cooper, has performed all over the country as Modern Mouth Maybelle and Hairspray. She's performed in Chicago as Big Mama. She's performed in Rent, Caroline or Change. Very well known, kind of a belter voice. We were talking about she's going to sing the role of Nicely, Nicely Johnson. Well, why is that? The reason is because I really wanted Altamise to perform with us because she is from Battle Creek and she's so talented. But you have to find a role. And at the time, when we were looking at musicals and kind of putting everything together, I could find spots. And so we realized if we set it apart and looked at the voice and the personality, you know, that's a character personality. It doesn't have to be performed by a male or female voice. It just has to have that feeling. And so when she sings Sit Down, You Rock in the Boat, we know it's going to bring the house down. Anybody who knows Altamise knows what an incredibly dynamic singer she is. So that was definitely a matter of being very creative with that. But that was part of the entire casting. Everybody who was initially cast was because of past relationships and success and wanting to really showcase these amazing artists. In fact, two of the artists are married to each other.
Hmm.
And if audiences watch carefully, you'll notice they will be the only two artists that will not be socially distanced.
They're in their own bubble.
They're in their own bubble. But our cast is 100% vaccinated. And so that makes it easy. But it will be staged in such a way, I don't think anybody's going to go, oh, that's socially distanced. You know, it's very subtle, but it is. We do take concerns for the health and safety of our orchestra and for our actors as well. But Nick Dramard and Desi DeVar are on their own kind of whole, I don't know what you call them, but first of all, if you saw Jersey Boys when it was here at Miller.
That was really popular, yeah.
Yeah, you saw Nick. He's a Jersey boy. He's been on Broadway. If you saw West Side Story with the Battle Creek Symphony, or if you saw it on tour, or if you saw it on Broadway, you saw Desi DeVar. She's been on Anita since the Broadway revival of Anita. But they also, during the pandemic, started producing their own shows because they're both very accomplished singers and dancers, and apparently very good at technology, because they've been putting together these kind of variety shows that are hysterical. And they've both got fantastic voices, and I love what they do, and they've got a huge following all over the world now. And with this, in addition to their own Broadway work, and I think Nick's been on the Town, Desi does a fantastic Liza Minnelli. And Nick will be doing the stage directing. So that's kind of the level, you know, that we've got. We've got Damon McToy, who performed with us with Motown a couple years ago. Everybody loved him. He's performed around the country.
You have no notes in front of you, and you're remembering all these names.
Oh, it's, I can't remember the Western singers' names, so don't.
We'll figure it out.
Yes.
Desiree DeVar is Miss Adelaide, and her husband is Nathan Detroit.
Correct.
Is that how that's going to work out?
Yes.
Okay. So she's going to sing a whole show with her nose plugged up, because that's the funny thing about
yes.
Adelaide. She's having symptoms because he won't put a ring on her finger.
Yes, yes. Psychological symptoms. Oh, she's just hysterical. But it's also interesting because there was some interesting conversations having to do with this, because we are also having some authenticity. And this is a concert version, not a stage version. So, for example, you're not going to see blonde wigs on people. You know, people are coming as themselves. And so things are a little different, you know, because our world is different, and we have an extremely diverse cast of incredibly talented musicians, and we're showcasing everything that they have to offer. We have Candy Putnam's helping us with costumes and a little bit of staging to add some color to it.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting mix and interesting conversations as we talk about, you know, the role of equity, diversity, and inclusion in casting, because this is a big conversation right now. And so it is something that's important to me. I am very proactive. I actively seek out and seek to learn about talented artists, and have for years, for a very long time, artists of color, of different ethnicities. We have a wide range of artists, and all of them are brilliant, absolutely brilliant artists. And I think that's going to be fun. It was very interesting. Just yesterday, I was in a Zoom meeting talking about Oklahoma. And somebody on the board said, well, that's a very white cast. And I said, no, there is nothing in the book that calls for, it's not Porgy and Bess, which is very specific, right? There's nothing in the book that says this has to be a white person, mm-hmm. nothing whatsoever. It's whatever cast. What you do have to do in casting, however, as you know, is very important. You have to fit the voice. Mm-hmm. You can't have a baritone sing a high tenor part.
I was going to ask if you had to change the music for Altamis to sing the role of Nicely Nicely Johnson, which is scored for a lower voice, I assume.
I didn't.
Really?
I didn't, because of where her voice fits, because she's a belter. She can very easily sing a tenor role.
Holy cow.
Because MTI will not let you change keys. You're not allowed to change a word.
That's
with these
Music
musicals.
Theater International, which is the company that rents the parts.
Yes. Yes. You sign a very long contract that says you will not change the lines. We actually shortened it for COVID, and we had to get permission, which we did, you know, because, again, we're looking at these safety protocols. But so you can't change anything. So that's the one thing you can't change. You can't put an alto in a high soprano role. The voice won't work. You don't want to put a kind of a dramatic personality into a comic role. Mm-hmm. But these attributes of characters are completely colorblind. On Broadway right now, they're doing Oklahoma, and their Ado Annie is in a wheelchair.
Yeah, that's a pretty big step.
And she's hysterical. She's brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, and it takes, I think, that kind of thinking to look outside the box and really look at our country. I saw somewhere, I think it is in 2065, 55% of Americans will be people of color. And so time to recognize and celebrate that diversity and make sure we're seeing it on the stage and providing opportunities to artists who perhaps had those opportunities closed to them in the past. You know, a friend of mine, a very typical situation, very talented, incredible pedigree, U of M musical theater grad, you know, right up there, kept getting hired to play a black woman. Funny, great voice, attractive, smart, responsible. Why is she getting pigeonholed? And it was conversations like that that made me really think about my personal responsibility as a director to break that typecasting. Mm-hmm. You know, when there's so many great musicals out there and so many great talents. And so it's, you know, it's a mission of mine. But everybody benefits.
Do you think that perhaps you will see more people of color in your audience with this kind of programming?
Well, I hope so. I hope that there's a couple different things that happen. I hope that people see there are some people I fear that will look at a black person and think of them as a threat because all they see is the news. That can happen. I knew that growing up and going to school in Baltimore. You know, I had my guard up a lot. And so when you see I just did a concert in Billings with 13 Native Americans. And somebody wrote to me, says, you know, this is so great because we tend to think of those people on the res, you know, as being the gangs of Billings. And it's so great. And so it's just a way to provide a different perspective, if that makes sense, because there are what I'd call it's a bias. It's not intentional. I'm trying to think of the word of it. I'll think of it in 5 minutes.
Well, I'm thinking of that you said, you know, being on guard. That is something that black and Latino folks are all the time when they're in majority white spaces.
Exactly.
So having a chance to come to a show of, a big show, full live music and a huge cast, and there's mostly people who are black and brown on stage, that's welcoming, I would hope.
I would hope so. And we at the Music Center feel it's not enough not to be racist. You have to be anti-racist, if that makes sense. You have to take a stand. And I think that was a shift. I think there was a long time where arts organizations weren't taking a stand. It's like kind of taking that safe middle ground. And the Music Center has moved off of that very clearly and had done so for quite a while. And so implicit bias is the word I'm talking about. There's a lot of studies about implicit bias, that there are natural things that, you know, if you back in the caveman days, right? If you saw a lion, you know, you perceive the lion as a threat. And there's that fight or flight things. And we still have with us many implicit biases within us. Preconceptions. The preconception that, you know, my friend actress, she should only sing black roles. That's an implicit bias. And so I think it's important. And she's, you know, she may be a lyric coloratura, but she kind of gets pigeonholed. And that's part of what I think we need to do in programming is to break the mold. And it goes a lot of other ways. It also means programming classical works of people of color that is completely non-Indigenous, you know. And this is, I would consider to be a non-Indigenous work, you know, a work that does not tell the story, compared to, say, Motown or gospel, which celebrates a certain culture. So I see a balance of both. I'm kind of getting off my soapbox here, but it is important to me. The other thing that I am a member of is the SOPA, the Sphinx Organization Orchestral Partners, where we are involved with the database, national database, and national auditions, and we actively seek out and invite artists of color in the orchestra. to substitute. We have blind auditions, by the way. We don't see who's auditioning, and we actively invite people. Because unless that invitation is there, you know, you're not going to see the representation if somebody who's been marginalized always feels like the door is shut to them. You know what I mean? So I can't say, I can't walk in those shoes. I haven't had that experience, although a little bit. I mean, I am part of a field that has 10% of all conductors are women, so maybe I know a little bit.
It's not 50%, over 50% like the actual population.
No, 10%.
10% female.
It's up from 4. Anyways, back to Guys and Dolls. But the bottom line is Guys and Dolls is such a great show, and it's so much fun, and the artists are brilliant.
I would like to hear the tune that Altamis is going to be featured on.
Oh, yes.
And the it's a highlight from later in the show, but we'll just jump forward and then maybe jump back a bit because there's plenty of tunes we can still
That sounds great. Who's highlight. Singing this on this recording? Is this Nathan Lane?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Nathan Lane is Nathan Detroit, I think.
Oh, right,
so
right, right.
This is somebody else in the cast and does a great job, but... in a way, now it's not going to be satisfying since we all know that your artist is going to be breaking new ground and singing the heck out of it.
Oh, she will bring the house down. But this will give you a hint of what's to come.
I dreamed last night I got on the boat to heaven, and by some chance I had brought my dice along. And there I stood, and I hollered, "Someone fade me!" But the passengers, they knew right from wrong. For the people all said, "Sit down, sit down, you're rocking the boat."
People all said, "Sit down, sit down, you're rocking the boat."
And the devil will drag you under by the sharp lapel of your checkered coat. Sit down, sit down, sit down, sit down.
Sit down, you're rocking the boat.
I'm with Anne Harrigan, the conductor of the Battle Creek Symphony, their concert version of Guys and Dolls. We'll go live on Saturday at 7:30 at W.K. Kellogg Auditorium with a cast of 15 talented singers and the full, almost the full orchestra. Can we talk about that swing aspect here? I'm hearing, you know, that big, big band brass sections and, you know, You have to be able to swing to play this score.
Oh, you certainly do. It has got that great jazz band sound, you know, that kind of tight old school sound, you know, it's really exciting and rhythmic, and our players will love it. You know, we got Dave Bernard.
Yeah. You know, for trumpets, he's the one.
Oh, yeah. Michael Gauss, Keith Guyman, we just have an A-list trumpet section, and so... this is their reward for all the Mozart symphonies that we do.
It is. They know they have to carry a lot of the attitude and the rhythm. You'll just have to make sure they, you know, brass always gets too loud. That's the.
Oh, you know, no, they're actually great. It's interesting how I think I don't know if it's a younger generation, but the amount of restraint and the dynamic range is huge. You know, it's very rare, you know, that I have to really kind of lay down the law and say, hey, you know, they can play full out, you know, they can do the planets or they can pull it back. And this is a very specific sound. It's very compact, I feel like, and it's got that energy to it, you know, so it's going to be fun. And we're going to have amplified singers. You know, I want to give a huge shout out, by the way, to Lakeview Schools who are helping us out, you know, making it possible for us. There's a lot of moving parts that go through this, and our support staff and cast, it's different than a symphony concert. You know, it's a production. Even though it's a concert, anytime you have that many people on stage. And I should mention, we should talk about our health and safety requirements, right? Like everybody else, in order to have concerts and go forward, we do have health and safety requirements. They're very simple. You have to wear a mask. W.K. Kellogg Auditorium is owned by Battle Creek Public Schools. It is their policy. There are no exceptions. A mask over the nose and mouth. The only people who are allowed not to have a mask are the singers when performing and the wind players, because it is hard to play the flute while wearing a mask.
Yes, I'm familiar. I've been, you know, sucking in a lot of fabric lately.
I bet. I'll be masked. Our orchestra will be masked. Our doctors and nurses have been masked for years and never complained much. So that's the one thing. It's a fairly short. It's probably an hour and 45 minutes and has a break, you know, so it's not an excessively long time, but it is a hard and fast and enforced requirement. So we are not asking about vaccination status. I know some orchestras are doing that. That is not what the Battle Creek Symphony has chosen to do, but it is important, and we will have masks available for people if they forgot to bring theirs. I've certainly been guilty of that more than once, where you show up and
it's
like... It's
so strange. It should be second nature by now, but it's weird to like, uh-oh, I forgot my mask.
It is. It's almost embarrassing, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, I shouldn't... I'm sorry you can see my face.
Well, the other thing is W.K. Kellogg Auditorium has a lot of space. It's a very large hall. Mm-hmm. For those people who are concerned, you know, about going out, you can pick your seats. And if you want, you can probably be 50 feet away from the next person because it is so big. And so I would encourage people, you know, especially if you haven't been out and you'd like to have a night in the town, you can do that. And we will be very concerned about health and safety and social distancing. And so come out and have a good time.
I just wanted to say the website is yourmusiccenter.org/guysanddolls or battlecreeksymphony.org. And there's a ticket box office number
2699-963-1911.
And since we're talking about health and stuff, why don't we listen to Adelaide's Lament?
Oh, yes, let's.
With her stuffy nose. Here she is.
In other words, just from sitting alone at a table reserved for two, a person can develop the flu. You can bundle her up in her woolies, and I mean the warmest brand. You can wrap her in sweaters and coats till it's more than her frame can stand. Still gets the feeling she's naked.
True love this day. Mansions I can wish you, 7 footmen all in red, and calling cards upon a silver tray. But more I cannot wish you than to wish you find your love, your own true love this day.
We heard a little of Adelaide's Lament and then a little bit of that sweet tune from the father figure, wishing Sarah Brown well.
Yes. Arvid Abernathy will be performed by Gerald Blanchard, one of the great voices in Western Michigan, has performed so many things with us, Beethoven's Ninth, Handel Messiah. This is a beautiful, a lilting ballad that he sings for Sarah Brown. So it will be very tender and haunting, I'm sure.
Well, we just have a few minutes left in this hour. 11 o'clock is coming up in 7 minutes. So let's remind listeners once again that this concert is Saturday at 7:30 at W.K. Kellogg Auditorium. And there's plenty of parking, plenty of room in the hall, and masks are required. You'll find detailed ticket information online at battlecreeksymphony.org, where you'll see the full season. Perhaps
yes.
Maybe you want to give us some hints about what's coming for Christmas?
Yes, we've got Diane Penning. Holiday Extravaganza and Minor Element. a very well-known local jazz ensemble.
Hugely ambitious group from Battle Creek. That's great.
Yes. Yeah. Brandon Fitzpatrick, James McGee, fantastic group of 10 artists. So we're kind of pulling out all the stops and with different styles of holiday music and other jazz elements. It will be wonderful.
That's all coming up this season, including a concert in collaboration with the Gilmore Piano Festival.
Yes.
That'll be in spring, and I have my fingers crossed. It was so heartbreaking when the 2020 festival was canceled just at the beginning of all this.
We're not even talking about that. No, we're going to have the brilliant Peja Mujijevic, the Serbian pianist who's just fantastic, performing Beethoven's Fourth Piano Concerto and the Rachmaninoff Symphonic Dances.
I heard Mr. Mujijevic perform John Cage at a Gilmore Piano Festival from years ago.
Did you?
Yeah. So he's got some range.
He is a raconteur. He will be a great interview.
Oh, good. So. I plan on it. So, well, one last piece to play us out. What do you suggest?
I say, how about Luck Be a Lady?
Okay. It's hard to top Mr. Sinatra on that, but everyone knows this song. I love it. Thanks for joining me today, Anne.
Thank you, Kara.
Any other last thoughts before we play ourselves out?
See you at the symphony.
There you go.
They call you Lady Luck, but there is room for doubt. At times you have a very unladylike way of running out. You're on this date with me, the pickings have been lush, and yet before this evening is over you might give me the brush. You might forget your manners, you might refuse to stay, and so the best that I can do is pray. Luck be a lady tonight. Luck be a lady tonight. Luck, if you've ever been a lady to begin with, luck be a lady tonight. Luck, let a gentleman.